Hey, on that note, we welcome in Super Bowl champion Bobby Wagner, friend of the show, the Seattle Seahawks linebacker. Bobby, thank you so much for being with us. I was doing a little research on you. Do you know that you lead the league in tackles since entering the league in 2012? That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I just found it out right now. Pretty cool.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, so we're going to get to your team, obviously undefeated, and we know there's questions with the defense we want you to answer, but I want to start with the news. COVID uptick, we're seeing more and more cases. What are you and your teammates, players around the league, saying right now as the numbers continue to climb lately?
I think it just kind of goes back to, like, just being disciplined. You know, I think the protocols that they have in play, it works, but I just think, you know, you have to make sure that you're doing them. So, I mean, I wasn't over there, so I don't know what happened, but I definitely feel like there needs to be a little bit more discipline, especially, you know, on our end to make sure that, you know, we can make it through the season. I think that's the only way we make it through the season is the guys follow the protocols as much as they can and you know, make sure that we're doing everything possible on our end outside of the building to keep everybody safe, because it's bigger than just, you know, yourself. It's, you got to think about everybody else's families.
Bobby, I was going to ask an on-field question, but I'm curious. Can you enlighten us, at least to some degree, as to what those protocols are? What does it entail? Just so the public will know exactly the kind of stuff that y'all have to deal with.
We test every day. Every day before you walk into the building, you have to take a test. You have to take a temperature. We kind of make sure every locker is separated, divided by, you know, individual dividers. You have a tracker for your wrist that basically lets you know, who you've been in close contact with. So if somebody does get the virus or does have it, it's easy for them to find out, you know, how long you've been around that person or, you know, how much contact that you had. That's just some of the few things that we've done to try to help. Obviously, there are different things as far as food. You know, you kind of order your food and, you know, and take it with you. You never really sit next to somebody while you're eating. So there's tons of protocols that we have in place to, you know, try to do our best to make sure that we don't, you know, get it.
Bobby, you have the play that kept your season undefeated, really. Jeff Schwartz pointed it out on his Twitter feed after the Patriots' goal line stand. You diagnosed the play ahead of time, reportedly, told your teammates what they were going to do, then created the backside pressure that stopped Cam before he could run it in, likely preserving an undefeated season. But you guys have given up a lot of yards and a lot of points so far this year. Can you address the defense and what you guys have to do so that you remain elite throughout this season?
We have to play better. I think you can't, you know, sugarcoat it any better than that. We have to play better. Our offense has done an amazing job with giving us the lead or, you know, providing the lead for us scoring quick. And so I think it's on us to grow in that aspect. We need to be able to protect the lead a little bit better and understand, you know, situational football. When teams behind 15 points, understand that they're going to throw the ball. That's the only way they're going to get into the game. So I think it's a growth factor for us. We just got to grow and mature in that area. But, you know, I'm really, really confident in our team. We have a lot of playmakers on this team, a lot of smart guys, and we'll figure it out.
Bobby, some people that, you know, that favor y'all a lot look at y'all and they say y'all have improved, obviously, in your red zone defense from a year ago, but and y'all have like a bend but don't break mentality. But in the end, when you look at some of the numbers, y'all are dead last in, what is it, yards allowed and dead last against the pass. What's the reason for that in your estimation? And more importantly, do you guys think that you're better now than you were last year?
I think we're at a better position than we were this year than we were last year. I do feel that. I think some of the numbers are kind of, like I said, you know, the offense is scoring a lot faster than they you know, did back in the day. And so, you know, we have to be able to protect the lead a little bit better and get smarter from situational standpoint. You know, a lot of the yards is coming from the end of the games and, you know, the quarterback just kind of throwing it out to trying to score points. And so, you know, we just have to stay aggressive and make sure when we get those leads, we make sure we stay aggressive and not change anything up.
Bobby, before we let you go, I love that you said this. You said Sue Bird needs to get a statue out there in Seattle. Obviously, she got her fourth ring in the WNBA. I'm a huge fan of hers. Why do you feel like she deserves that?
I mean, just look what she's done for the city. Look at what she's done, and you know, from the you know WNBA standpoint, she's been an icon here. She's been an icon in the WNBA. She's just an amazing person. I was fortunate enough to meet her. She came down to our facility one practice, and so I just think you know when you have somebody like that, you need to you know give her flowers while she's here.
I'm with it. Viking Seahawks Sunday night. Bobby, we'll talk to you soon. Appreciate you. Stay safe.
All right, Bob.
Appreciate it. Look forward to it.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. It's a banger, probably gonna go platinum. They could use some Big D and Big D, y'all. One of the bigger surprises so far this season is just how much this Cowboys team has struggled, particularly on defense. Through four games, listen to this, Cowboys have given up an average of 37 points, 431 yards. Here's what the team has to say for themselves.
Our effort's been good. I mean, in certain plays, some guy, me included, it may be a lack, but overall, the effort is there. You don't expect, we're in the NFL, you don't expect guys to full speed for 70 plays. That's not possible.
There's been no effort issues, in my opinion. I think the effort's been good, but I would not call this group soft whatsoever. I would just say that we just played very poorly.
Stephen A., nice face. Dallas plays the 0-4 Giants on Sunday. Mr. Smith, Southern Steve, whoever you are at the moment, what can they do to save their season?
Well, first, let me say that I appreciate you introducing me, Max, Molly Karam Rose, and Max Kellerman. It's always good to see you, brother. Let me tell you something right now, okay? Let's put this in its proper perspective. I mean, did you just see those clips? First of all, Xavier Woods, I think that was his name, Max Kellerman. Was that that man's name?
I think
that was that man's name. Did you hear him say, hey, things are, it's all good. I mean, it's really not that bad. Really? Really? You're 1-3. You've got the third worst defense in yards allowed, the second worst defense overall in rushing yards allowed, and the absolute worst defense in terms of points allowed. You are awful as a defense. And somehow, some way, you got a young fella out there named Xavier Woods out there talking about how everything's all right. It's certainly not a matter of effort. You got the defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan, with his stern look, looking like, it looked like a Texan, you know, and look all rough and tough and all of that stuff. Only thing missing was the man cowboy hat and that cigar. And what is he sitting up there saying? What a straight, stern face. Not a matter of effort. I mean, guys are not soft, and they're working very hard. So if they're working very hard and the effort is there, that basically means either they can't play or you can't coach because it's awful. Now, I don't know if the players themselves are to be blamed because schematically we're looking at a guy like Jalen Smith, who we all loved particularly when he was playing alongside Leighton Vander Esch, and we said, hey, this might be the great linebacking duo in the National Football League. And yes, less than 2 years later, suddenly we're talking about him like he's trash. Could it be that it's not him? Could it be that it's the coaching? Could it be that it's the schemes? I say yes. I'm not going to point the finger so defiantly in Jalen Smith's direction. He didn't suddenly forget how to play. I'm looking at the coach. And why am I looking at the coach? Because got a coach of Mike McCarthy that was accused of being a bit archaic. And they said, hey, you don't need to be coaching Aaron Rodgers any longer, man. You're not up with the times. So he takes a year off. Supposedly he travels around the NFL circles. Supposedly he learned a thing or two. And that offense looks pretty damn good right now. But what does he do? He goes out there and he gets a defensive coordinator. And who does he get? in the midst of the Dallas Cowboys defense looking relatively respectable under Rod Marinelli over the last couple of years and Mr. Rashard, what does it happen? They go with this guy, Mike Nolan, get him out of the scrap heap. Last time he was a defensive coordinator was in Atlanta in 2014 when they were the 31st ranked defense in the National Football League. They were so bad, the man couldn't get a job as a coordinator for the last 6 years until one of his old buddies brought him off the scrap heap. This is what's going on in Big D. It's problematic. It's McCarthy's fault for bringing him on, but it's definitely his fault. Don't want to take money out of his pocket, Mac Kellerman. Never do that. Never do that. But I do say the man should be reassigned. He shouldn't be the defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys any longer, period.
Well, what must the Cowboys change to save their season is the question. The answer is nothing. They don't have to change anything. They're one half game out of first place in the NFC. What do they have to change? They're like, if not for the fact that the Eagles had a tie instead of a loss, the Cowboys would be tied for first. I'll tell you something else, Stephen A. The Cowboys defense is about to get healthy because they're going up against the Giants offense. The Giants offense has scored one offensive touchdown since week one.
Unbelievable.
This can't even be real.
And got the nerve to have a coach named Judge.
They should call this. They should call this the Something's Gotta Give Bowl. Like, something's gotta give. The Giants offense, the Cowboys defense, something's gotta happen here. Look, here's the real answer to the question, what do they have to change? And it's not for this season, it's for next season. Fire the GM. Jerry Jones, the owner of the team, needs to have a very difficult – no one ever wants anyone to lose their job, but he's got to have a very difficult talk with Jerry Jones, the GM. He's got to come say, Jerry, come sit down in my office. I know you always wanted to be known as this great football guy, and you get all the credit for building a team, but we're going to go in a different direction. And then hire a real GM. Stephen A., isn't it interesting? You bring up Mike McCarthy and Nolan and the coaching staff as the issue, and you're right. Well, who hires them? And by the way, the Giants, who I just mentioned, has scored one offensive touchdown in the last billion quarters, right? Who's their offensive coordinator? Jason Garrett. What, like, who just left? The issue is Jerry Jones, when you add it all up, I'm painting a worse picture than I ought to about him. He's a league average GM with along with his son, Steven, maybe even a tick above, but that's all he is. If they want to change things, the owner's going to have a difficult talk with the GM. He's going to have to say, Jerry, you got to hire a real GM. And if they do that, things might change.
It's not going to happen, but I'm not going to sit there and go that route of firing the GM, because even though I think there's some questionable moves over the years, I think that Jerry and Steven, in terms of accumulating talent and the right talent, I definitely think that they've done a good job. I don't think we can deny that. The reality is that when you hire a coach, you have to give him the power or some latitude at least to pick at least some of the personnel that he wants. Now, they told him to keep Kellen Moore, but they let him keep a defensive – they let him bring in his own defensive coordinator. I don't think they should have done that personally. I think that what they had in place last year, if you had those same guys, Marinelli and Rashard up in there, guess what? I think that everything would have been absolutely fine this year. But they didn't do that because Mike McCarthy wanted to bring in his own guy. And to bring in a guy that hadn't been a defensive coordinator over the last 6 years, who's last seen – hovering over the 31st ranked defense. It's just shameful, right? And I think it's chickens coming home to roost.
Real quick, Stephen A., this is what I would say about that. Those are all the details about coaching hires, who the coach is allowed to hire, which coach you hire, which affects which coaches he hires. But the fact of the matter is Jerry will only hire a dude who's not going to take the credit away from him if they win. Jerry wants to win his way. He has to ask himself, is it worth dying on that hill, right? That winning your way is so important that you may never win again in your lifetime a Super Bowl because you wanted to do it your way so bad.
True. Cowboys favored by 9.5 in this one, fellas. I mean, if they lose against the
Giants.
Says
a lot about your Giants, Mom.
Real bad, bad, bad.
Says a lot about your Giants.
I don't even know if they're my Giants anymore, to be honest
with
you. I don't know what they are.
We might have
broke up. We might have just broke up for this fall. Maybe we'll get back together next year.
I don't want to
even change the blue you wear.
I don't want to hear from the Giants about Saquon either.
Oh, God.
You can score a touchdown in three games. You can score two offensive touchdowns in three games, guys. You don't need Saquon Barkley for that. Stop it.
It's bad. It's bad. All right. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Right. There's our friend, Jeff Passan, joining the conversation. Jeff, let's start right there with Cody Bellinger. How ridiculous was that play?
Ridiculous, absurd, obscene, untoward, unkind toward the San Diego Padres and Fernando Tatis Jr. in particular. I mean, it's hard, Molly, to hit a ball out of Globe Life Field. We've seen this postseason just how big this ballpark plays. And for Cody Bellinger, over a six-second period to run 97 feet, jump, extend his arm 4 feet over the wall, and yank that ball back. That was a go-ahead home run by Tatis right there. The Padres just never went ahead because Bellinger was in the right place at the right time and because stars make star-like plays, and that's what he did.
I've obviously been incredibly impressed with what I've seen from the Dodgers in this truncated season. I mean, they really seem to want it. They haven't won a World Series since 1988. We know that story. Unfortunately, speaking on behalf of myself and Max Kellerman, at least to some degree, the Yankees are an entirely different story, Jeff. I mean, they are down 2-1 to the Rays. They smacked Tanaka around last night. I don't know. They sent Montgomery to the mound today. I don't know what to think about this team right now. Tell us what you've been seeing from the Yankees and how much trouble they are in terms of this season ending tonight.
Stephen A., you know what I'm seeing from the Yankees? I'm seeing them lose to a better team. That's the reality of the situation right now. The Tampa Bay Rays are a better constructed team than the New York Yankees. They are doing it at anywhere between 33% and 50% of the price of the New York Yankees. And I think that long term, they are in a better position because they have better younger players than the New York Yankees. So it's not like the Rays are some flash in the pan that all of a sudden are going to be going away and stop being the thorn in the side of the Yankees. No, this is an organization, Stephen A., that is here to stay. And that's the scariest part for the Yankees, that they can go and spend their money, that they can bring in their stars, that they can do everything that they do so well. And listen, Brian Cashman has done a nice job of getting this core to the place where it is right now. But the reality is the New York Yankees have not been to the World Series since 2009, and I don't think they're going to be going this year either, because whether it's the Tampa Bay Rays or eventually the Houston Astros, I think somebody is going to be knocking the Yankees out before they can get there.
Possible. I mean, but before, I don't want to debate that right now with you. I want to get back to the Dodgers for a specific reason, Jeff. Tanaka, like, we see big game pitchers have bad postseasons, Tanaka right now, but he's been a big game pitcher in the past. But there is such thing as clutch pitching. Like, that's indisputable. We've seen it throughout history. Clayton Kershaw, and also pitchers who choke. Clayton Kershaw, the quality of his prime is as good as almost anyone who's ever lived. It's comparable to Koufax, Randy Johnson, any lefty you want to name. And yet his playoff resume is lacking. It's the reason the Dodgers haven't won a World Series. He seems to be turning that around. Do you have a theory as to why this might be, and is it sustainable?
I'm not going to go there yet, Max, because if we look at Clayton Kershaw's playoff history, in the early rounds, he's actually been good to spectacular. You know, in the division series, he has put up a number of fantastic outings. And we saw in the wild card round, 13 strikeouts over 8 shutout innings. Yesterday, if not for a couple of home runs that he gave up, he was looking pretty good there. I want to see Clayton Kershaw excel in the NLCS. I want to see Clayton Kershaw excel in the World Series. I want to see him on that biggest stage absolutely shove. That, to me, along with a ring, is going to be what takes this stigma away from him. And look, I don't think Clayton Kershaw, Max, is suddenly, you know, going and mainlining kryptonite in the playoffs. I just don't think that there's something about the playoffs that is antithetical to him pitching well. I just think he has had some poor outings, and those things add up and they compound each other and they get in your head because you're a human being and because you're an athlete and because it's difficult when you have failed in places in the past to turn around and succeed in them. But I think he has it in him to go and do that and change that reputation.
Jeff, I don't want to be a killjoy here, even though I'm a Yankee fan and my Yankee fandom is what it is. I want to veer away from that for a moment, bringing up the Dodgers again, but in concert with the Astros. In light of this shortened season because of the pandemic and everything, I think that the Astros have basically gotten off the hook to some degree with the whole sign-stealing scandal that obviously took place. One of the teams that was vehement in speaking out against them were the Los Angeles Dodgers. And it's entirely possible that they could end up meeting one another in the World Series eventually. What are your thoughts about that possibility? And what are your thoughts about the fact that because of all that has happened, that the Astros really haven't had to face, you know, the muster of the ramifications of everything that they basically initiated or provoked? I know the A's went at them a little bit, but still in all, you haven't really talked about that much.
They brought it upon themselves, Stephen A. That's what we have to remember throughout all of this, that the Astros, whatever they have facing them, they did it to themselves. And listen, as much as I am a stand for my own picks, as much as I picked the Rays and the Dodgers to go to the World Series and would like to see that to make me look smart, there is nothing that would make me sit here and sip more tea than seeing the New York Yankees against the Houston Astros in the ALCS and the Houston Astros against the Los Angeles Dodgers in the World Series. That is just the ultimate in drama. It's like NBA-style drama right there. You have hatred. You have teams that despise one another, teams that in baseball, you never saw players come out and talk about other players. In spring training, all they were doing was talking about the Astros and how badly they cheated. And yet you have to give the Astros credit. What they've done after a bad season, frankly, a sub-500 season, after losing Garrett Cole to free agency, after losing Justin Verlander to Tommy John surgery, Yordan Alvarez, maybe their best hitter, out for the season. Here they are, one win away from the ALCS, their fourth consecutive ALCS. The Astros, I don't think, want to be the villains. What I do think is that they want to show everyone that they're actually good baseball players without banging on a trash can.
Yeah, well, I think people are discounting the success they've had in recent years for good reason. Meantime, the Marlins, look, they wouldn't be in the playoffs under normal circumstances. These are not normal circumstances. They are in the playoffs. They have their ace going to try to keep their season alive. Even if he does win this game, let's assume they lose to the Braves. Was this a success for the Marlins? Has Jeter and Don Mattingly, have they proven that they have this team pointed in the right direction, or were they just lucky that you had a billion teams in the playoffs this year, Jeff?
I think it's more, Max, on the side of success than luck. Because in looking how the Marlins have rebuilt themselves, they've done it around homegrown starting pitching. And look, to get guys like Sixto Sanchez, who's going to be starting today, when they're young, they got him in the JT Realmuto deal. They got Sandy Alcantara in the Marcelo Zuna deal. When you trade guys of that ilk, you better get someone back. And what the Marlins have done has shown that in all of those trades, they got at least one consequential player back. And when you do that, you can build teams from within. And listen, the Marlins are never going to be a team that's going out there with a $150, $175 million payroll. You're not going to see that from them. So you have to do it that way, where you draft and sign guys internationally and develop them. And you can see from their starting pitching, they have among the most enviable starting rotations in baseball because they're young, they throw hard, and they have cojones. They can go out there in the playoffs, into Wrigley Field, and knock out the Chicago Cubs.
Jeff, you know what? I hope I can sip tea with you. Gladly, we will, from a distance. I'll get the honey. We'll get a little green tea. We'll get some lemon, and we'll enjoy ourselves. But before I let you go, real quickly, I guess it's on a positive note, if I can make this positive. We're dealing with a pandemic. It started really rough for baseball, and now we're talking about crowning a World Series champion. Are you surprised that we made it this far?
I am a little bit surprised, to be honest. And I think it's a testament to the will of baseball players that they were able to avoid all of the distractions out there and really follow the protocols. I think it's a testament to Major League Baseball pushing through. And pushing through, you know, sometimes so that executives, players, and others thought, what are we doing here exactly? Rob Manfred was like, no, we are going to finish this season. Like, he was steadfast about that. And it's interesting to compare and contrast what the NFL is dealing with right now, considering that Major League Baseball has actually been through these things already. Mm-hmm. And I'm here in Arlington, Texas right now. I was at the Dodgers-Padres game last night. I saw the Cody Bellinger thing. I saw, you know, this ninth inning that was full of drama as the Padres tried to make a comeback. And I thought to myself, this is why baseball continued, so we could have a game like this. And it's going to be nice to see 11,000 people at the stadium next week during the NLCS, and to have that many people here during the World Series as well, because people deserve to see games like that in person.
No question. It certainly hasn't disappointed thus far. All right, we'll be sipping tea soon. Jeff, talk to you. Stay safe.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There he is, the boss, Rick Ross. Rick, what's going on? There's a lot to talk to you about right now. I hear you're working on new music. Thank you. We need that. 11th Studio Adam album titled Richer Than Ever. Okay, we love that. Your Miami Heat, all that good stuff. I just got to say one thing. You didn't put on any COVID weight. Max has been complaining he put on all these COVID pounds. You're looking real slim, like you've been in the gym. Am I right?
Of course I have. Of course I have. You got to stay in shape, baby. Miami Heat fan.
Okay, get it. We know how Miami is. All right, let's talk about your Miami Heat. Be honest here. Be objective. What are the chances your Heat actually come back, or is this thing done Friday on ABC?
We not done yet. We not done Friday. We know the difference between the Lakers show and the Heat game. The Lakers are the all-stars. They're the superstars. Miami Heat, we're the ones that's starving. We number one, straight up. I understand what's going on with the Lakers show. I understand. This is our first time, our first season together as a true club. We made it to the finals when everybody thought we wouldn't make it to the playoffs. We here.
Stop that.
Jimmy Jesus scored 40 on Bron. Jimmy Jesus.
Come AKA on, Rick. Jimmy Buckley. Come on, Rose. Come on, man. I got to get up. You
come
my
on
brother.
Now, Steve.
You,
we've been through this
no,
before,
it's all
Steve.
Love.
We went
it's
through
all
this
love.
Before,
come on
Steve.
Now.
We went through this with the Super Bowl, Steve. What we got to do is we enjoying basketball. That's what we're doing. We love it. We love the Lake Show. You know, we lost Kobe. I understand the energy and all that. But, I mean, this is just the beginning run for the Heat this season, and we'll be back next season also, and I feel like we still got a great opportunity.
If you look at the Miami Heat right now, they clearly, listen, they play, as far as I'm concerned, they play damn good defense. They've been fighting, especially over the last two or three games. I give them major props for that, and I think the future is bright. But right now, you came on First Take and was like, yo, it's all right to be rooting against LeBron once he leaves. I mean, that could be the case now. How you going to feel if he close y'all out Friday night? What kind of love are you willing to give your former Miami Heat that now is in L.A. about to bring him a chip?
Oh, I got to be totally honest. I'm going to tell you the same way I told Dr. Dre, congratulations if y'all pull it off. But don't be surprised if Jimmy Jesus bring it home. I've watched LeBron do this before. I've seen him get ahead two games and lose the series, and I'm talking finals, guys. We've seen this. We got young team, young Bam. We got Hero. Come on, man. We got Robinson, the Dragon. Come on, man. Jimmy Jesus, first season at the, come on. We back on the run.
Rick.
Y'all felt this before.
Rick,
y'all
LeBron and AD
like
are like.
Watch the Heat. For three or four seasons, go back-to-back?
Rick, LeBron and AD are like, mess with me. You know I got it. Stop it right now. I can't mess with you on this topic anymore. I got to switch to the NFL. Tua Brian Flores, your head coach. Brian Flores, your head coach, said that they're not making a quarterback change. They're 1-3. There are signs of life, though, with this Dolphins team. How long do you think they should go before they start your first-round draft pick?
Honestly, maybe two more games at the most. Maybe two more games. I feel like, you know, Tua coming off his situation, his injury coming out of college, it may be best to let the team play itself and work it, its wrinkles out itself. That's what we should do. Instead of putting our quarterback in, our money man, and letting him play through it, let him sit back and watch as well as all the other positions play out the wrinkles. I think that's genius. I love the idea of it. Halfway through the season, everybody should know their responsibilities, should know the weight they got to carry. And once we inject our new quarterback, the life of our team, the future of our franchise, I think it should be good. I think it's a genius move. Shout out to Coach Flores.
Let me transfer back to the Miami Heat in this regard.
Wonderful.
Obviously, there's a spot out there called Wade County. It's Wade County. We know that LeBron was once in that town. Now it's Jimmy Butler. How is that place, South Beach? How are y'all feeling about Jimmy Butler compared to what your thoughts were about D-Wade and LeBron James? What's the kind of affection and feelings that y'all have for Jimmy Butler out there?
Oh, man, the city, we in love with Jimmy Butler already. We love what's going on. We loving the energy. First season with the club, we made it to the finals. We still the underdogs. We love being the underdogs. We just ready for Jimmy to go ahead and step up and take full control of the team. We just want to make sure he understands we put this entire franchise on his back. And it's something he can handle. We got a lot of young talent around him. We got us some tall work. We got us some short work, some quick shooters. We got us some revolvers and some shotguns. But more importantly, we just ready for him to step up and accept that full responsibility, which we seen him do game three. Let's take it to the next one.
Rick, I want to ask you this, because last time we saw you, we were down there in the Super Bowl having a good time. We wish we were down there right now for the finals, but obviously dealing with this pandemic. But you got the Marlins that are obviously in the postseason right now. You got Jorge Masvidal, who's just crushing it in the UFC. Then you got the Hurricanes that are making a comeback. We got the Heat in the finals. You called him Jimmy Jesus, taking that to another level. And you got a great young quarterback. What's it like in Miami as a sports fan right now? How's the town feeling?
Oh, man, it's feeling like a big bucket of lemon pepper wings from Wingstop. That's how I was feeling the rosé, you know? It's a beautiful city that we live in, man. And if I was an athlete and I just got a big bag of money, I want to come to Miami. I want to be on Fisher Island. I want to be on Star Island. I would want to ride Ferrari next to Rick Ross, of course. So it's going to be a lot of talent, and it'll always be like that. But most importantly, we got great managers. We got great club owners, you know, and that's why we winning. That's why we had the longest streak, or one of the longest winning streaks in the history of the NBA. I'm sure y'all remember that. You know, we went four finals back to back, and I believe we won two, possibly three out of the four. Y'all will correct me if I'm wrong, but we back on that run, and it's feeling good.
Yeah, you won two out of four with LeBron in the Heat.
Okay. Meantime, Rick, I'm glad you remember that.
Your Hurricanes. I mean, college football is better when Miami is good. I love it when Miami is good, and you're good. But you're in as the underdog against Clemson. What's the forecast for that game, according to Rick Ross?
I'm always going to go with the city of Miami. I'm always going University of Miami. And I'm sure you great with records. And I'm sure you remember that record that Miami had when we were 50. I believe it may have been 54 game win streak before we lost one. You will correct me if I'm wrong. And that is when college football was college football, but we are saluting the youngsters, and the University of Miami will pull this one off as well.
Going back to the Heat and the Lakers, I'm not going to let you off the hook. Well, you like it. You like it, Rose, because I'm coming to you with it. Are you saying that y'all going to be – I mean, you going to overcome a 3-1 deficit and win the chip, or are you realistically preparing yourself to thank the Heat for the season that they've given you once this comes to an end? Because you know they're wearing the Kobe jerseys tomorrow night, right? You know the Lakers wearing the Kobe jerseys tomorrow night. You understand that, right?
And by me being the basketball fan that I am, big homie, I want a Kobe jersey too. I'm going to call some of my friends over at the Lakers and let them know I want a Kobe jersey. But guess what? That ain't got nothing to do with this win we finna bring home. And we going to bring the win home in the honor of Kobe. Now, y'all remember that look AD had in his face on game 3. Y'all remember that? Or y'all forgot already? You remember when LeBron had how many points? What was it? 9 or 10?
Well, it was 8 in the first half. It was 8 in the first half of game 4.
Okay. Y'all remember
Jimmy
that.
Jimmy Butler had a
All we got to do as a club is come back out with that same intensity and make sure AD looked the way he did in them size 22 Reeboks. Them same Reeboks he had on the other night when he was looking around.
Come on, man.
We need him doing that.
And by the way, you know that this ain't the particular moment in time, right, to be bringing up lemon pepper wings. You do understand that, right? You do understand?
Why not?
I know.
Shout out to Lemon Pepper Lou. Shout out to Lemon Pepper Lou, man.
Lemon Pepper Lou, Jimmy Jesus. There's a lot happening here right now. Richer than ever. Working on your 11th studio album, Talk About Longevity. Can't wait to hear the whole thing. Thank you so much for being with us this morning here on First Take.
Richer than I ever been. And, you know, thank y'all for having me. Y'all keep winning, and y'all winning big.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5X miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, Al, despite a 3-1 start led by Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens passing game is ranked second to last in the NFL, ahead of only the Jets. When asked about it yesterday, here's what the reigning MVP had to say.
I'm not happy because, you know, those passes, I would like to connect with my guys on those passes. I feel like it's a lot of yards and touchdowns we be leaving on the field when we don't connect. So that's probably why our passing not where it's supposed to be. But I feel, you know, it's still early in the season. We got 12 more regular season games, and I feel we good, though.
All right, that was Action Jackson. D. Wood with us now. Damian, always good to see you, sir. Mr. Smith, starting with you here, are you worried about Lamar's passing ability?
Yes, I am. You know, listen, Lamar Jackson is an electrifying talent, and we're proud that he's a starting quarterback in the National Football League because he deserves it. But with greatness comes great responsibility, and we know that he's a great athlete. We know that from the quarterback position, he's electrifying running the football, which is why the Ravens had the number one rushing attack last year. We recognize that. But the question has been repeatedly about his ability to throw the football. And although there's been vast improvement, we also understand that the standards and the, you know, it's going to elevate. And people are going to expect you to have to meet up to them. Now, this year, he's had three good games. Obviously, against Cleveland to open the season, against a winless Houston team after that, and last week against a Washington football team that doesn't even have a damn name and just benched their quarterback. The one bad game he had was against a playoff caliber team, which is the Kansas City Chiefs. And it's one thing to lose to them. It's another thing to be ineffective while doing so. You can lose a game, and it could be because of a variety of things other than yourself. But Lamar Jackson couldn't get going against the Kansas City Chiefs. And come playoff time, you're going to have to go up against more formidable teams. And those that are not as formidable as Kansas City offensively may very well be formidable as the Kansas City Chiefs defensively. Because you're not playing against the opposing offense, you're playing against an opposing defense. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to produce. And when we look at the two playoff games that he performed, once against the Chargers, where he only completed 48% of his passes and had about 25 yards passing for the first three-plus quarters. And then last year, he completed 52% of his passes against Tennessee. That's not going to get it done. That's what we're looking at. That's the standard we're holding him up to. The question is, when we look at him, do we see a guy that's that we're confident can get the job done throwing the football come postseason time? That's the litmus test for Lamar Jackson. And right now, that answer would be no.
I think you're dancing around it, but I don't think you have it quite, Stephen A. And I don't know if what I'm going to say is more damning than what you said. I don't think passing is the issue with Lamar. Let's keep in mind, at age 21, he was the most accurate passer in the history of the NFL at age 21. That includes Peyton Manning and everyone. These are just by the numbers. And I get play action helps him and all that stuff, and they're not playing from behind usually. He doesn't have to, you know, throw it a lot. But his accuracy started out better than anyone's ever at the age of 21 in the NFL and has gotten better. I'm not worried about throwing so much and accuracy so much with Lamar. I'm worried about something more important, I think. I'm worried about pressure, because 21-1 against the rest of the league, 21-1 against the rest of the league, 0-3 against the Chiefs in the regular season. But worse than that, 0-2 in the playoffs, which means you are almost undefeated in your NFL career until you play in the highest pressure games, and then you're winless. And if you look at it, and Brian Griese pointed it out on Monday Night Football against the Chiefs, when the blitz came, Lamar's eyes were on the ground. Like, he wasn't keeping them down the field. The pressure was getting him to him. Now, Griese also pointed out, where were the hot routes, right? Like, the entire team didn't respond well to the blitz, right? And you compare that to Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes, who like might be the best who ever did it. But Lamar Jackson's issue to me is not his passing. I think that is trending in the right way and is already good enough. It's dealing with pressure in the biggest moments. He has to start demonstrating that when it matters most, he can stay the same guy.
Well, listen, let me say right off the top, you know, Lamar Jackson is only at 31% of passes down the field, which is 20 yards plus. So I know a lot of people are going to jump on that. But I think when you look at Lamar Jackson in the passing game, it's deeper than that. When we talk about Lamar Jackson, a lot of things have arisen from past years. Number one, the offensive line is not playing as well as it was in the past. Their right guard, who's going to be a future Hall of Famer, Marshall Yonder, retired in the offseason, and the guys in the interior just haven't played as well as they played, you know, last year. And when you look at Lamar Jackson and this passing attack, everything is predicated off the run. They don't run the ball as well as they did last year. Teams are starting to creep up. They're not, you know, playing as well up front. The running game is a little bit harder, although they're third in the league in rushing. And all those things are compiling one on top of the other. Listen, No one's going to mistake Lamar Jackson for, you know, some of these other elite quarterbacks who put up gaudy stats in a passing game. That's not the way their offense is designed. They're not going to, he's not going to be throwing up 300 yards, you know, plus every game. They're predicated on ball control, running the football, and play action, hitting the ball down the field. Now, Lamar Jackson has to do a better job of hitting these plays down the field when they're open. But my whole point is they need to do it. They have to do a much better job blocking up front, giving Lamar Jackson more time to read the defense. And I think the passing game will come together over time, but they got to do a better job of just solidifying things up front for that Baltimore Ravens offense.
Guys, work with me on this. Let me just throw this out. I mean, this is just my opinion, but it's really more of a question than an opinion I want to throw y'all away. We were watching Kansas City last week against New England or earlier, you know, a couple of days ago. So, obviously, with New England being compromised because of the COVID-19 test of Cam Newton and all of this stuff, right? We saw Bill Belichick exercise a strategy where he didn't blitz Patrick Mahomes, essentially, because you blitz Patrick Mahomes, he will pick you apart. That made Patrick Mahomes look relatively normal. We're talking Patrick Mahomes. Now let's transfer that kind of thinking to Lamar Jackson. What do teams usually do against him? They compromise their own secondary because they leave a spy sometimes too, because he's so electrifying running the football that, again, it compromises your secondary, all right? And still, in tough situations, meaning postseason primarily, this is a guy that we have seen struggle. Now, he's 21-1 against everybody else, or 22-1 now against everybody else, and he's like 0-2 against, or 0-3 rather, against Patrick Mahomes. But understand the importance of what I'm saying. If a secondary is compromised because this dude is so electrifying running the football, and still you're perceived as having trouble as spots get tight, throwing the football, I think that's a legitimate reason to look at you and question what you can do now. Obviously, the future, he's going to be sensational. But for this moment, meaning this season, I think there are legitimate questions about his ability to throw the football.
Well, listen, Stephen A., I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you at all. Until Lamar Jackson goes out here and win, you know, big game, particularly against the Kansas City Chiefs or in the postseason, we're always going to be raising these questions about whether Lamar Jackson can beat you not only with his legs, but with his arm in big moments. What I am saying right now is that it is bigger. A lot of things going on with the Baltimore Ravens offensively is bigger than just Lamar Jackson hitting plays down the field. They have some things to work out offensively that, if they don't figure that out, it doesn't matter what, you know, the topic that we're talking about, because they're not going to be as effective as an offense as far as the Baltimore Ravens are concerned.
I mean, there are reasons a young quarterback may not be so accurate down the field, including lack of a consistent outside threat, which you could argue, right? And they run a lot of three tight end sets and all this kind of stuff. And they don't run a lot of screens and stuff like that could, like, artificially inflate your numbers. Although, Damian, you're talking about accuracy down the field, and that may be more related to an outside threat, or not just a threat, a guy who can actually make those plays. And that's all legitimate. But, you know, given his age and what he's already done, it seems to me he has more than enough ability to make it work as a passer. My question is pressure. Like, when I see a guy's eyes go down when the blitz is coming, I think, oh, that's not dealing physically, literally, with pressure well. But also, when I see an 0-5 mark, 0-3 against your chief rivals, literally chief rivals, and 0-2 in the playoffs, but you're almost undefeated in 22 games otherwise, I think, whoa, wait a minute. Are we talking about Lamar Jackson? Can he win as a passer? Or are we asking, can he pass under pressure? To me, those are two distinct questions, and I'm starting to question that. I'm starting to wonder, is it a pressure issue?
Max, you know what? We had the same discussion about Peyton Manning at the beginning of his career. Peyton Manning started off, he was like 0-3, and we were having the same talk. Can Peyton Manning win the big game? It even went back to Peyton Manning in college at Tennessee, University of Tennessee.
We weren't sold on him until he beat Brady in the AFC Championship game and the Patriots. We weren't sold on Peyton Manning until that moment.
It took him like a decade, guys.
Correct. Correct.
It took him like a decade.
Listen, Lamar Jackson, he's young. He's young. We understand that there's work to be done as far as the passing game is concerned in order for that Ravens team to take the next step.
No question. And obviously he's been much better targeting his backs and tight ends than he has with his receivers. Hey, Damian, you're a Lakers fan, right?
Molly, you already know that. You know I'm a Lakers fan. Come on now. We about to wrap this bad boy up. Ain't it right, Stephen A? We're going to wrap this thing up,
you're
right?
You're right. I think it's a wrap. I think it's a wrap tomorrow night.
It's a wrap.
It's all over? Get the cane?
I will be wearing purple and gold on here.
That's not what Rick Ross had to say, y'all. You heard him.
Oh, it's going to look good.
You better make sure of it.
It's going to look
good. Just make sure of it.
No.
You guys don't hear what I say.
Don't you worry about that.
I ain't worried about it.
Don't start with me this already.